air for Fan for Racing Radio. This is Monday night, April the 1st, and no April Fool's joke. We are here tonight for our Richmond NASCAR race review and hot topic sound-off discussion with the Fan for Racing crew. Of course, we're going to start with some short track news and updates for the ARCA Menards, the ARCA East, and ARCA West series, as well as the NASCAR Truck Series. All of those series did not race this weekend, but we will let you know when their next races will take place. Afterward, we're going to comment on the post-race media interview with the NASCAR Xfinity Series winner, Chandler Smith. He's the driver of the number 81 Joe Gibbs Racing Toyota. So it's about a 7-minute, 45-second interview, and then afterwards, Sal and I will give our comments about that interview. Afterward, we'll review the NASCAR Xfinity and the NASCAR Cup Series races at Richmond Raceway this weekend, and then, of course, we'll end our episode with the NASCAR Hot Topic Sound-Off conversation with our Fan for Racing crew. So with that, I'm going to go ahead and get started with some of the short track racing news that we have from the weekend. And let's start with the Dirt Series. The World of Outlaws Sprint Cars, well, Mother Nature won again at Thunderbird Speedway. They had dangerous wind gusts ruling out racing on Friday night, so that race was postponed. Rico Abreu, though, reigned supreme on Saturday, scoring his second win in as many runs with the Outlaws at 81 Speedway. So you can read all about that by Alex Neaton over at theworldofoutlaws.com. Also, the Nippy 50. Ricky Thornton Jr. led flag to flag to pick up a $20,000 paycheck at Maquoketa Speedway on Saturday. You can read about that over on Dirt on Dirt at and learn more about that race itself. We're waiting for Sal Segala to show up. I know he comes, he's at work and will be limited on his time with us tonight, but we're going to try to make it work. But on the short track scene, the NASCAR Wheel and Modified Tour had a thrilling Friday night battle at Richmond Raceway. That race was won by Justin Bonsignor over his rival Ron Silk. And Tad Haslop writes about that over at NASCAR.com. So you can read more about that by going over to NASCAR.com. I'm going to check and see if Sal is here yet. He is not yet here, so I'm going to continue on with some other news. The Orange Crush 200 was a hit with drivers and fans alike. This was a great race. A lot of fans filled the stands there, and they let everybody know that they really had a good time at that event. Jeff Burton had been pestering his father, Ward Burton, to run just one more race. Let's get on track together and run one more late model stock car race. And so they did that. Jeb's team is the Seller Burton's racing team, and Ward ran his first race since 2012 with proceeds from the event going to the Ward Burton Wildlife Foundation, adding a charitable aspect to the festivities. But really cool to see that happening at that Orange Crush 200 on Saturday. So really happy to see that going on. All right. I still don't have anything here from Sal. So I'm going to go ahead and do a quick rundown of the ARCA Menards series. They did not race this weekend. I want to give you when the next races are for all of those series. And this is the date for you to mark on your calendar, April the 20th. There's going to be two different races, one from the ARCA Menards Series and one from the ARCA Menards Series West on that date. The ARCA West, well, let's start with the ARCA Menard Series. They'll run the General Tire 200 at Talladega Super Speedway at 12:30 p.m. Eastern Time that day, and it will be televised on Fox Sports 1. That's a Saturday, I believe, and fans will definitely want to tune in for that race. Now, the ARCA Menard Series West will race the same day, but they're racing at the nighttime. It'll be 11:15 p.m. Eastern Time, and that'll be at Kevin Harvick's Kern Raceway, and that will be a live-streamed event, the MMI Oil Workers 150, presented by the WestCoast.com Motorsports Hall of Fame, and it will be available via live streaming on Flow Racing. So watch for that to be coming up real soon as well. All right, we're still waiting on Sal, so I'm going to go ahead and give you the information for the Truck Series. The Truck Series did not race this past weekend, but I want you to know when their next race is going to be, and that next race is the Long John Silver's 200 Friday night, April the 5th at 7:30 p.m. Eastern Time. That will be at Martinsville Speedway, and it will be televised on Fox Sports 1. Radio coverage is available on MRN and SiriusXM NASCAR Radio. Now, Brian and I will be previewing that race on Thursday during our podcast. We usually put it out early in the afternoon on Thursday, so watch for that to come out with our preview of the Long John Silver's 200 for the NASCAR Truck Series, their next event. All right, so we got some of that done. If you're looking for some articles and learning more about what's going on in the ARCA Menard Series, kind of staying with that, they're going to have the CGS Imaging return as a sponsor for the CGS Four Crown Championship. That's probably the biggest news that's come out this week in the ARCA Menard Series. That will include that race that will take place on April 20th at Talladega Super Speedway, July 19th at Lucas Oil Indianapolis Raceway Park, September 1st at DeCoin State Fairgrounds, and September 13th at Watkins Glen International. Now, this particular Four Crown Championship gives drivers a chance to show their skills on all the different types of tracks that they race. You notice we've got a super speedway track. We've got the Indianapolis Raceway Park track. The dirt track at DeCoin State Fairgrounds and a road course are all part of that Triple Crown Championship or that Four Crown Championship sponsored by CGS. So you can read all about that over at arcaracing.com if you want to take a look at that. Still no Sal, so I hope he can make it because my voice just not make it for a whole hour here. So hopefully Sal will be able to make it here soon. Okay, let me see if there's anything else. You can go behind the scenes from the ARCA East Pensacola 150 at Five Flags Speedway. That also is over at arcaracing.com. And they've got Tide becomes a sponsor of the ARCA Menard Series race at Kansas Speedway. That race is taking place on May the 4th. You can also see Gio Ruggiero's winning pass. That was the Reese's sweet move of the race from Five Flags Speedway, and so you can see all of that over at ARCA Racing, and you can buy your tickets, claim your seats for the General Tire 200 at Talladega Super Speedway. All the links are available over at arcaracing.com. They've also got the standings for each of the series. Right now, it's Greg Van Alst on top of the list for the ARCA Menard Series, Christian Rose in second. Andre Perez is third, followed by Amber Balkan and LeVar Scott, rounding out the top five in the ARCA Menard Series. Let me see if we can get it here for the ARCA East. They only have one race in the books. Right now, Giovanni Ruggiero is at the top of their list. He's 2 points ahead of William Sawalich in second. Bubba Pollard did a one-off race. He's in third. Connor Zilich is in fourth. And Hunter Wright rounds out the top five in that series. Then we'll take a look at where they stand with the ARCA Menards Series West Series points. You've got William Sawalich at the top of the leaderboard there. Giovanni Ruggiero is in second place, 6 points behind. Grant Infinger did a one-off. He's listed in third place. Connor Mozak in fourth. And Sean Hingorani rounds out the top five in the ARCA East. Okay, let me see if Sal is here yet. Nope, not here yet. So we're hoping to hear from Sal sometime here soon. And we'll see if we can't bring him on as soon as he shows up. So you've got I did not tell you when the ARCA East is going to be racing. They'll be racing their General Tire 150 on April the 26th. That race starts at 5 p.m. Eastern time, and it will be at Dover Motor Speedway, and that also will be available on FS1 so that fans will be able to watch that on TV. So a lot of racing coming up here for the ARCA Menards Series platform, starting on April 20th with two races from the ARCA Menards Series at Talladega and the ARCA West out at Kevin Harvick's Kern Raceway. So a lot to look forward to on the ARCA Menards Series platform. All right. Now, the NASCAR Truck Series did not race this past weekend. So again, we will be doing pre-race preview on Thursday on our podcast. There's quite an entry list for that. Some notable is the number one will be driven by William Sawalich, number seven by, I believe, Zane Smith, 22 is TBA. The number 45 will have Caden Honeycutt. Then you've got Waters in the number 66, Carroll in the number 90, and Wood will be driving the number 91 for that Long John Silver's 200 out at Martinsville Speedway. So that's a little bit of a preview before the preview that will take place on our podcast on Thursday. So I'm kind of waiting for Sal because the next thing that we're going to kind of get into here is I do have the post-race media interview with the NASCAR Xfinity Series winner this past weekend. Chandler Smith won his second race of the season for Joe Gibbs Racing. He was driving the number 81 Toyota for that team and was able to come up with that victory. So there's always a post-race interview with the winners at the track. And so we're going to play that. It's 7 minutes and 45 seconds long. And then Sal and I, hopefully, he'll be here for that. We'll be able to comment after that interview. So we'll keep an eye on that and see if we can't get Sal's comments afterward, after we play it. I don't want to play it, though, until we hit that 7:45 mark. To give him time to get here, and then he will hopefully be here for the reviews that we're going to do for the NASCAR Xfinity Series and the Cup Series. We'll start that at the top of the hour. We'll do 15 minutes for each series, and we'll be done then by 9:30 for our NASCAR Hot Topic Sound-Off discussion with the Fan for Racing crew. I know Jay Huseman is planning to be here for that. So I'll look forward to hearing from Jay for our Hot Topic Sound-Off discussion. Okay, Sal did send me a message. He says he's having a few issues. He'll call in a few minutes. So hang tight for Sal as soon as he gets things settled down. He will call in on the show. So we are at that 9:45 time frame. I'm sorry, 8:45 p.m. Eastern time frame. So I'm going to go ahead and do the media interview with Chandler Smith. Like I mentioned, it's 7 minutes 45 seconds. So we'll listen to the interview and then give our comments afterward. So here we go.
All right, we're going to get started with our post-race press conference. We're joined by Chandler Smith, winner of today's race. Chandler, tell us about that last run that brought you to the win.
Yeah, no, it was definitely a little stressful just because once we got probably halfway through that tire run that we were on, I was like, man, if a caution does come out now, we're toast. Like, we're toast. There's nothing, no getting around it. We're done for. But it didn't, and there was a long green flag run. And then all the way to about, I don't know, 10 to go, I started noticing I was lapping cars that were within, you know, before that cycle inside the top five, I believe. I was like, okay, like, we're in a decent spot here. Like, I think even if a late race caution was to come out, maybe depending on how many laps of caution we run, we'd be okay. Still got to execute the restart with everybody else out back. But obviously the big concern would be people coming on tires because for us, I think I got the lead in, I don't know, probably six laps or so. I'm not 100% sure, but it was pretty quick. Tires were big, even for, I mean, we only had, I think, 10 laps on those tires, and we still came down and pitted just because you don't exactly what happened today. So great call by Jeff Mendring. We definitely had a really solid number 81 Mobile 1 GR Supra. Wasn't great. It was good enough to get the job done.
Indeed. We'll go ahead and open up to questions. Please raise your hand, and we'll get you a mic. We'll start up here with Bob, and then we'll work our way around the room.
Bob Harker, Fox Sports. What do you think it says that you won this race? You repeated with a different team, different make.
I mean, I don't see it as anything different. I love Richmond. I've always loved Richmond. Even as a kid, playing on NASCAR games and stuff, I loved racing on Richmond, even on the games for some reason. It's just the characteristics, the similarities that this racetrack has to a lot of short tracks around America are very similar. And there's not a whole lot of those that we race at on the NASCAR circuit now, unfortunately. That's close to the grassroots of what people are used to racing. So that alone is why I love and enjoy Richmond. I think is why the successes came for myself from at Richmond.
Okay, we'll come over here and then over to Chris.
I'm Taylor Kitchen above the yellow line. This season, going to a different team, I mean, it's a different field, but also talking about the strength of the Toyotas in general. What has it been like with that transition and, you know, coming with this win today?
It's been good. I was with Toyota for, I think, 7 years leading up to last year, and then obviously was with Colleague Racing last year, went to Chevy. Now I'm back home with my Toyota Racing family, back with all my familiar faces, the people that I know that in the middle of the night, if I was in a crisis and they'd be there to help me. That alone right there means everything to me, performance or not. Having a family outside of my actual inner family is big. But on top of that, the amount of resources they pour into myself, all the resources they give the teams, it's an equation to success. And that's why we are, I guess you could say, a dominant. The Toyotas have been dominating. So, yeah.
Chris Powell, Couch Coach Live. Congratulations on the win, Chandler. A year ago on Monday, you won your first race here in Richmond, and fast forward, you win today. What's your thoughts on his dominating performance today, and also just your season so far, your second win this year? Just your thoughts overall just on your 2024 season as well.
Yeah, we've had a solid season for sure so far. I don't know where we're going to end up on points. I'll hop on Twitter here, or X, whatever it's called nowadays. I'll hop on there and look at Bob Hockers' page, see if he's updated the points, and we'll see where we're at and how everything lines up there. But no, it's definitely been solid. Just trying to stay consistent is our biggest thing. Just be consistent, bring cars capable with good speed every single weekend, and the results will come with that.
Okay, we've got a question upstairs. Can we go up to the press box?
ChrisNightGetchmas.com. Congratulations, Chandler, on the win. What's the biggest weakness on the 81 team, if there is one, after six races or so?
Trick question, because we're one team. I'm not going to throw people under the bus, and I know they wouldn't throw me under the bus. We definitely have a few things that we need to clean up, but today was a solid showing on the things that we needed to clean up, so we're going in the right direction. So,
okay, we'll come back downstairs.
Dustin Pavino, JC, Kurt Owen, Chandler. You've already got more playoff points than you did last year at this point, only six races in. How important is this early season success?
Yeah, it's huge, especially playoff points with a big reset. Regular season points are big because of all the bonus points that you're rewarded at the very end of the season on top of the wins and stage wins that you get and accumulate playoff points all the way leading up to that point are really big. That can make or break your season when you're going into different rounds for the championship. So building that cushion up, I don't know if we're in the lead for points. I would assume we are. Trying to extend that cushion, that points lead, so we have a buffer. That just sets us up for the bigger trophy at Phoenix.
Okay, go ahead.
On New BNBC Sports. So obviously a truck win here and then two Xfinity wins here. Why are you so good at managing your tires at this track where it's such an issue?
I guess just my background. Come from super late model racing where manager stuff, but you also got to be making speed at the same time. You know, 6-7 years ago, as I was, you know, racing super late models, learning the whole saving tires stuff, I went through a few learning curves on the approach of, you know, half throttle, how to push it, this, that, and other. And the most success that I found is exactly what I've applied to ever since I started racing in the NASCAR series. So, but everything that I learned goes back to the grassroots of racing super late models on a Friday and Saturday night. So I've done that since I was 12 years old. I still do that to this day. I say that I didn't race one last year. I'd like to race some this year. But we'll see. All that stuff is sponsorship pending. So, look, if anybody wants to sponsor a super late model, come on with it. We'll go have some fun.
Is it more satisfying when it is a tire management race, something where, you know, it's more in your driver hands?
Yeah, 100%. Anytime that we have a race, which just like Bristol Cup race, tire management was big there. I loved it personally as a fan that weekend. I wasn't there. I would have loved if the Xfinity car was there because I think that the Xfinity race would have been just as good, to be honest with you. So, yeah, anytime you can have a race where the drivers mean way more than, let's say, for trucks, for instance, at a mile and a half, they're pretty much wide open where there's a lot of aero that's involved in all that, it's made for good racing.
Bob, again?
Have you seen the highlight, or did you see Joey Gase throwing to the back of his car at Dawson Cram?
What?
Okay, so you haven't seen it.
No. Hold on, let me see. Oh, my gosh. That's impressive. He gets an attaboy for me. Hey, I may get bashed for saying this, but I am all for letting drivers show their emotions and letting them have at it. What, 10, 15 years ago, them jokers were fighting on pit road and there wasn't fines. I'll probably get a fine for saying this right now. So, so I like that. Fans love it, too.
Any more questions for Chandler? Chandler, thanks for coming in.
Thank you, guys.
All right. That was Chandler Smith, driver of the number 81 for Joe Gibbs Racing's Toyota. And he gave us a pretty nice interview there. He gave his opinion about the Joey Gase Dawson Cram incident. And he's all for drivers being able to show their emotions. We'll have to see if NASCAR says anything to him about his comments. I don't think they will. I think NASCAR understands that driver emotion is all part of the package that comes with NASCAR. The other thing that I liked about the interview with Chandler is him talking about how the drivers want to have more of the race in their hands and the hands of their pit crew because they can manage that. And that's what I think fans enjoy. At least I enjoy that. Watching to see how each of the teams manage their situations differently and putting it in the driver's hands and giving them a chance to really put their skills on display. I guess what I don't like is when they choose to take care of their competition by bumping them out of the way. But I'm all for drivers being able to display their skills on the track. And that's what I think the tire wear allows for in racing. And it started, I guess, at Bristol. Was it Bristol that all of that started with the tire wear? I do think it's a good thing for the sport. Drivers have been asking for it. They got it. Maybe a little more than they wanted at Bristol. But I think in the end, everybody really enjoyed it. And enjoyed having it more in their hands, the outcome of the race. And I know on Hot Topics a little bit later, I think this topic is going to come up again. And we'll be talking about the restart, or the final restart, and some other things. We'll be talking about that Joey Gase-Dawson Cram incident as well, so stay tuned for more information there. But I don't have any issue with drivers showing their emotions as long as it doesn't put anybody else in jeopardy. I don't like the idea of using their car as a weapon. I'll talk more about Joey Gase later on our Hot Topics, but that's kind of where we are. But I have a co-host that just called in. Welcome to the show, Sal.
Thanks, Sharon. I'm sorry. You know what? That's what happens when you try to do a show when you're at work and nothing, nobody's shown up yet. And my boss called, and I have to hang up, but I got to talk to him first. So we're still sorting out stuff over here. Yeah.
I need to go, Sal.
No,
or
you know
you
what?
Okay?
I'm okay. I'm just waiting for my
You're waiting for somebody to show up.
Yeah, it's all right. That's just tell me where you're at.
Well, I just played the interview with Chandler Smith, and he was talking about the tire wear and how drivers really like having things in kind of more of their control, and that even with the pit crew and the crew chief, having the crew chief be involved in putting together the strategy and everything, that drivers really like that when they have more in their control.
Yeah, they usually always do. You know, it makes it easier for them, you know. But, you know, I don't know. I'm still on the fence on that as far as because some of these drivers are still young. They haven't been around enough to really, you know, to really, should the crew chief really take their word for it? Should the crew chief, if he's a veteran crew chief, he has to do what's in the best interest for him and the team because he's got the script.
Okay. I hope we didn't lose you. Sal, are you still there?
Anyways, I know I'm just ranting and raving, but.
That's okay. I know what you're saying about the new drivers, though. They don't have that kind of experience sometimes, especially on the NASCAR level. And so, like we saw it with Ty Gibbs, you know, Martin Truex that was at Bristol. Martin Truex and Denny Hamlin said, go ahead and go. We'll pass you in the end. And that's exactly what happened. He used up his car. But that's how they're going to get the experience. And know what they need to do in the future, I guess.
Yeah, I mean, you know what? It's like anything. It's like life in general too. You know, you have to. You know, I mean, it's trial and error. You got to learn sometimes. Put it that way. You know, you got to learn sometimes.
Yeah.
You know, so you might as well.
I mean, this is what fans have been asking for. This is what the drivers have been asking for, and now they're getting it. So we'll see what happens. But I just want to give full disclosure, though. I did not watch the races this weekend. I've been spending time with my family over the weekend for the Easter holiday and doing things with them. So I did not get any of the races in this weekend or last weekend. So it's going to be hard for me to comment on some of it. But I thought it was, just based on what Chandler said, I felt I could comment on that.
I mean, they had a good pit strategy. I mean, it worked. It won the race. And actually, yeah. I think if Cole would have ran the same strategy, I think Cole would have ran him down and beat him because Cole started making it, you know, from being a lap down. Because I think he lapped everybody up to the ninth driver after he made the tire change. But the drivers were expecting another yellow. They didn't expect this race to go green, especially listening for as long as it did. It went all the way to the end. So,
yep.
You know.
Okay, well, let's go ahead and move on. We're at the top of the hour, and it's time for us to do our review of the NASCAR Xfinity Series race, the Toyota Care 250 at Richmond Raceway this weekend. As we've said, Chandler Smith led a Joe Gibbs Racing sweep at Richmond Raceway Saturday afternoon. He cruised to a 4.495-second victory over his teammate, Derek Almirola, and was it Tanner Gray or Taylor Gray in the Toyota Care 250 on Saturday. For the second straight year, Chandler Smith won this race at Richmond Raceway. This is his second win of the season and the second win at Richmond. Eric Almirola won both stages and finished second in his third start since returning to Joe Gibbs Racing. Now, here they say it was Taylor Gray, so I don't know which one it is, but the number 19 of Taylor Gray finished in third in his series debut, and Corey Heim finished in fourth place, making it just the second time in history that Toyota swept the top four positions. It also happened at Dover in 2012. The rookie, Jesse Love, driving the number two for RCR, rounds out the top five. Then it was the number 88 of Bubba Paulo. He was the highest finishing junior motorsports driver in sixth place while making his series debut. The number 48 of Parker Kligerman, Austin Hill in the 21, Sammy Smith in the number 8, Cole Custer, they all round out the top 10. There were 14 lead changes among 7 drivers and 6 cautions for 51 yellow flag laps. The average speed of the race was 81.178 miles per hour. And I want to get your thoughts, Sal, on the top 10 finishers there. I know you said you think Cole maybe could have done it if there had been more laps, right?
Yeah, I think if there had been more laps, Cole probably could have made it a more of a better race. Like I said, the pit strategy that Chandler used, you know, was it was spot on, and it was just the drivers, like I said, were waiting for another caution, you know, and it never came out. So these drivers started. Cole was the first one to come in and take the tires. I'm trying to get there because I'm doing everything off my cell phone. I don't have a laptop.
Oh, that's right. Okay, well, Chandler Smith, Eric Almirola, Taylor Gray, Corey Heim, and Jesse Love, the highest finishing rookie of the race. Then it was Bubba Pollard making his series debut in the number 88 for Junior Motorsports, Parker Kligerman, Austin Hill, Sammy Smith, and Cole Custer. Are the top 10 drivers there. So the drivers that qualified for, who qualified for the Dash for Cash, because the Dash for Cash was part of this. This was the qualifying race for the Dash for Cash. So the drivers that qualified for Martinsville Dash for Cash at Martinsville for the extra bonus money are Sammy Smith, Eric Almirola, Love, and Kligerman, all qualified for next week's Dash for Cash. So that'll be interesting next week at Martinsville. Any thoughts there?
Yeah, you know what? Gosh. It sucks because I don't have a laptop, and JC's page isn't the same on the phone as it is with the laptop. But you got to give a huge shout out to Bubba Pollard, who finished sixth. He started almost last because it was qualifying. He was the first one to go out on qualifying, and he qualified horrible. It's like he said, he goes, I don't know. This is my first time in the car. I don't know. The protocol, how they qualify, I don't know nothing. So he did the best that he could. But I'll tell you, I kept the car clean. Did good on his pit stops and was able to, you know, get that sixth place finish. You know, all the everybody there, you know, was talking, you know, about how good he did. Gosh, this is horrible that I have no information in front of me. I can't do this with no information.
That's okay. We'll make it work. Ryan Vargas and Brandon Jones both had engine issues, taking them out of the race early. Ryan Vargas was out on lap 18, Brandon Jones on lap 42. A couple of drivers had brake issues that took them out of the race early. Patrick Emmerling was out on lap 95 because of brakes, and Sheldon Creed had a brake issue taking him out of the race on lap 118. Then there was the Joey Gase accident that took him out on lap 171. We'll probably be talking about that during the Hot Topics. I guess he threw his rear fender at Dawson Cram. Did you see that, Phil?
Yeah, I seen that. That was a perfect shot. When he got out of the car, and it looked like, and I think what the track workers thought was he was just going to tear off, you know, a piece of the car, you know, throw it in the back of the truck, because they stood around while he did it. And he pulled it off, and all of a sudden he ran to the track, and it was a perfect shot right across the windshield. And I think it even surprised the track workers, you know, that he was able to, you know, that he did. I think it surprised the fans even more that they allowed him to do it. But if you see the replay, it looks like he was just, you know, look at the damage and, you know, just see the part and just decided to pull it off.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I didn't see it, so I can't say a whole lot about it. But I would think it would be a safety issue for him to walk up to the track like that with cars driving around there. But we'll see if NASCAR says anything Tuesday or Wednesday this week.
They were talking about the possibility of a fine or something because of, you know, because he did run out of the track, you know, instead of getting in the ambulance.
Yeah, he's supposed to get out and get into the safety vehicle, and then to keep them safe, number one, and then move on. But yeah, a lot of people seem to be standing around, from what I can tell, and just kind of allowed him to do it. So we'll see what NASCAR says in the end. But let me go ahead and cover the points here. Chandler Smith is at the top of the list. I'm sorry, what?
Oh, no, go ahead.
Chandler Smith is at the top of the points list this week. He's at 265 points. 10 points behind him is Austin Hill. They both have the most playoff points. Chandler has 13 playoffs with three playoff points with three wins and three stage wins and two race wins. Then Austin Hill has the 11 playoff points with one stage win and two race wins. So those are the only drivers that have multiple wins in the series after six races. Then Cole Custer's in third place. He's 41 points back. Jesse Love, the rookie, is in fourth place. Then it's Riley Herbst in fifth place. A.J. Allmendinger holds down that sixth spot. Then it's Justin Allgaier, Parker Kligerman, Sammy Smith, Brandon Jones, and Sheldon Creed, along with Anthony Alfredo, with the top 12 spots. Those are the drivers that qualify for the playoffs. But we have a long way to go. At the playoff line is Anthony Alfredo on top of the line. Shane Van Gisbergen, another rookie, is just below the line. And I believe there's just one point between those two drivers. So that's a pretty tight battle right there. And one point back is Ryan Sieg in the 14th spot. And Parker Retzlaff is another point back in 15th spot. So that's pretty highly contested, that cutoff line for the playoffs. So we're still early with just six races into the season. The other drivers Those are the only drivers that have wins right now are Chandler Smith and Austin Hill. So the other wins were by non-Xfinity Series regulars. So we'll have to see how this continues to play out.
It's going to be a, you know, it's going to be another good season, you know, like you said, you know, see how things play out. You know, with you know, Chandler on the, you know, on top, and, you know, then, of course, you know, you got the Ricky, Jesse, and Ford. You know, he's showing a heck of a lot of promise. He's getting
Yes, he is. Are there any surprises for you in this list, or any surprises below the cut line that you thought maybe would be above the cut line by this point? Or you can't see, can you?
You know, yeah, you know what? I pull up NASCAR.com on my thing, yeah. You know, it's still early, but you know, yeah, it's kind of still early. You know, I'm looking through the list, you know, it's kind of like who you expect, you know, Allgaier, Allmendinger, Custer, of course, Austin Hill, you know, he's always, him and Chandler, you know, are Chandler's really becoming, getting to be, you know, one of those drivers. Well, I guess one of the biggest surprises, probably Shane Van Gisbergen, you know, but then he had that win, you know, on the road courses, you know, and you're going to expect that, you know, that he's going to get those. Well, actually, he didn't get the win on the road course.
Last year, but not this year.
Yeah, last year he got it, but he didn't get it this year. But, you know, as they come up to him, you know, you're almost going to expect him. He'll make the playoffs, you know, just on the fact, you know, that he will end up. You know,
yeah,
you know,
that would be interesting. I think the second half of the season will be better for Shane Van Gisbergen because he'll be visiting some of these tracks for the second time. He'll kind of get his comfort level, I think, on the 1.5-mile tracks. We know he's got a comfort level on the road courses. And the short tracks, that's a lot of bumping and banging that maybe he's not used to. But I think in the second half of the season, he might get a little more comfortable with it. So we'll see what happens as the season moves forward. Let's go ahead and move back to the Cup Series because they race this weekend as well at Richmond Raceway. And that was the... Again, I did not see these races, so I can't really comment too much on them. But I know that Hamlin held off Truex in an overtime to win at Richmond Raceway. Denny Hamlin's number 11 Joe Gibbs Racing team gave him a clutch pit stop to emerge with the lead out of the pits, and then he was able to hold the advantage on a two-lap overtime shootout to claim the Toyota Owners 400 victory Saturday night at Richmond, which is his home track. It was Hamlin's 53rd career NASCAR Cup Series win, the second of the season, and his fifth victory at the three-quarter mile Richmond Oval. He won by a .269 second margin of victory over Team Penske's Joey Logano, and it came at the expense of his JGR teammate, Martin Truex Jr., who finished fourth despite leading a dominant 228 of the race's 407 laps. So Denny Hamlin won the race for his second win of the year. Joey Logano finished in second, followed by the pole winner, Kyle Larson. Then it was Martin Truex Jr., Chase Elliott, Christopher Bell, William Byron, Brad Keselowski, Chris Buescher, and Tyler Reddick rounding out the top 10. There was a delay of 16 minutes because of rain, so the race started with a wet weather package. The track was damp, but the NASCAR was able to have the drivers switch over to slick tires by lap 40. The race ended after that one overtime attempt. Truex Jr. was seemingly in control of the race when the caution flew for a spin by Larson with two laps remaining. Leaders all pitted. Hamlin took the lead on pit road. He held the lead through the finish. Stage one was run by Kyle Larson. Stage two by Martin Truex Jr. There were 16 lead changes among seven drivers, five cautions for 54 yellow flag laps. The average speed of the race was 94.076 miles per hour. Do you want me to run down those top 10 again, Sal, real quick so you can comment? Okay.
Oh, no, I have it. And then I've also seen the second part of the race. So that pit stop by the JGR crew was huge.
That was a huge pit stop.
But then, as far as the restart, that came into play. As a restart, everybody thinks that Hamlin jumped the start. They went back and kept reshowing it. It was borderline. Of course, they're not going to call it against them. But that just pissed Truex off, because then when they were coming around the corner, Hamlin kind of got into Truex a little bit. And then Larson got into Truex, and Truex got back into Larson, and Truex just had a bad... He just had a bad overtime. At the end of the race, he tried to punt Larson, but Larson got him back, and then he went and ran into the back of Hamlin a few times. But before that, what brought that caution out? Larson lost control of the car, and it looked like Bubba Wallace said, hit him, but he didn't. He just lost the air. It just happened when he spun, pit lane opened. So he didn't have to drive all the way around the track. It was crazy the way it happened. He ended up with the better finish with Wallace hitting him than if Bubba wouldn't have hit him.
I know Martin Truex was frustrated because he had the lead pretty much in hand. And then with the restart and on pit road is where he lost it. So.
Well, he lost it on pit road.
Huh?
He lost the race on pit road.
Yeah, that's where he lost the race, actually. But then
on pit road because it made it worse because Hamlin got on the gas a little bit before Truex and got out in front of him. But, it is what it is. I mean, you know what? NASCAR reviewed it. They said it was good. You move on. But, through all the stuff that happened, he ended up finishing fourth because, he just, instead of keeping his composure, he just got mad and just started hitting everybody. Yeah. But, and the one that actually made out was Joey Logano, who finished second. Congratulations on Joey on that second place finish. He really needed that. He hasn't been really having the best of seasons. Then going back to the top 10, Brad Keselowski, having the eighth place, he's been consistent this year. Chase Elliott finally getting up there, getting the fifth place finish. Christopher Bell looked strong for a while, too. looked like Bell might have been, maybe even possibly one of the drivers, to also win. But, it's going to be interesting to see the conversations they're going to have with Joe Gibbs Racing.
fly on the wall,
What they had today, Bubba Wallace was running up there in the top five when he got the worst of the whole thing. He ended up finishing 13th, Kyle Larson. But yeah, it was a good finish. I mean, Truex wasn't happy at the, he's never happy. That guy could win and he's still unhappy. He's just unhappy.
Well, it's the frustration. He lets the frustrations get to him.
He's just salty. Yeah. He's just a salty person, period, you know. So, I mean, he can't please him. So, it doesn't matter. But either way, you know, Hamlin got the win. And Hamlin got the win, and he got the lose.
Yeah.
It was a short interview. It's a very short interview when he got out of the car. He didn't really talk too much, you know. It's just, you know, thank you. Thank the sponsors.
Yeah.
Got the car and went to victory lane. You know, he knew he wasn't.
Well, yeah, that's true. One of the interesting things about this race, though, Sal, is that all 36 cars finished the race. Nobody had a mechanical issue. Nobody was out because of an accident. Most of the cars, a total of 22 of the 36 cars, finished all 407 laps. The most that anybody finished down was three laps for all 36 cars finished the race. So I thought that was amazing. You don't see that too often.
Yes, you don't.
I'm going to go. Do you want to cover the points? Do you have it up there? You want to cover that?
Yeah, I'll cover it. My guys haven't shown up. They're supposed to be here at 5:30, and it's already 6:30, and unfortunately, I got to sit here and wait until they decide they want to show up. Yeah, I know. It's not very. Professional.
No.
So anyways,
I
got him.
Go ahead.
On the points, we got Martin Truex Jr. still leading the points. We got Kyle Larson in second with one win. Denny Hamlin in third. He just picked up a second win. Ty Gibbs having a really good season, actually. So he's sitting fourth in points. Ryan Blaney in fifth. Christopher Bell in sixth. William Byron in seventh. And Chase Elliott in eighth. And then from there, then we go to Ross Chastain in ninth. Tyler Reddick in tenth. Alex Bowman 11th. Chris Buescher 12th. Kyle Busch, gosh, we thought he'd have been a lot higher than 13th. Bubba Wallace in 14th. Daniel Suarez 15th. And Brad Keselowski rounds out the top 16 with John Hunter Nemechek, 7 points behind
Keselowski.
Ran for that last spot. Gosh, Ty Gibbs sitting fourth in points. I mean, he's really having
fantastic.
A good strong season. You know, he's in his own world. And it's funny because they talked to a few of the drivers and they're asking them who's the one driver the hardest driver to get around on these short tracks, and everybody had almost agreed that it was Ross Chastain.
Oh, Ross Chastain. Okay,
yeah,
I thought you were going to say
Ty
Gibbs.
No, they're saying Ross Chastain. He's sitting ninth in points. So Logano in 19th. 19th in points, that's why I said it was a huge week for him, you know, to finish second. He needs to get back in his groove. Noah Gregson still at the bottom, you know, 30th. Austin Dillon, 28th. You know, I know there's been a lot said about Austin Dillon and, you know, putting another driver in that car. You know, when is Richard Childress going to realize, you know, that you know, you want to have a strong team, you need to have two strong drivers. You just can't have one, Kyle Busch. And I think it's affecting Kyle because I think Kyle's pushing really hard. That's why he's only 13th in points and without a win.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, I know a lot of people say that Austin, this is a make or break year for Austin Dillon. He's got a great teammate. You know, you've got one of the best drivers in NASCAR as part of your team, and you know he's got to rise to the occasion. But, yeah, I just wanted to cover the playoff points. There's two drivers that have double-digit playoff points. The first is Denny Hamlin with his two race wins and one stage win. And then the other is William Byron, who also has the two race wins. So that's put them out front right now as it pertains to the playoff points. The other drivers that all have a win are Kyle Larson, Christopher Bell, and Daniel Suarez, who right now he's at 15th. He's above the cut line, so he wants to improve, I'm sure, and secure his spot. He's pretty much secured with that race win, but you don't want to be below the cut line and going in with a race win in the playoffs. So I'm sure he's looking to try to look for his next opportunity to get that victory. So going to be interesting here in the Cup Series. I think we could see some changes and shuffling of the drivers in those top 16. So. Whoops, he had to call back in. Okay, so.
Yeah, I had to call back in. So anyways, Kevin Harvick being, it's all right. So I think with Kevin Harvick being an announcer now, he's been chiming in a lot more on the different drivers, and he still doesn't see why the fans don't give, Denny Hamlin, a little bit more respect. And I think this is Denny Hamlin's make it or break it year. I think if he doesn't win a championship this year, he needs to really look at his career, and I mean, I know he says, I'm not about the championship, I'm just about the wins. But he's a liar. You're a liar. I mean, your whole year is set on winning the championship. Yeah, you want the wins, you want the trophies, but what good are all those little trophies if you don't have the big trophies? And will his career be complete, if he never wins a championship? I mean, Dale Jr. had to go through it, his whole year in the Cup Series, without a championship, and does he feel his career is complete? I mean, yeah, sure, they've got the Daytona 500. Dale Jr. has Xfinity championships, but Hamlin don't have no championships.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I would agree with you. He's got a track record there with regard to championships. We'll see if maybe this is the year that he does it. There's no denying that Denny Hamlin is a talented race car driver. He's got 53 victories. The only thing missing is a championship, but I think of another driver, Mark Martin. Mark Martin had a lot of wins and no championship, and he had a lot of respect. Denny does not get the respect sometimes. I think he says things sometimes to get himself into the news and keep himself relevant, but I do think that Denny is a talented driver. I just don't like the way he necessarily goes about things sometimes, but, we'll see how it works. Maybe this is the year he gets that championship. Sal, you going to be at a race this weekend?
No, this rain just really, it seems like every time we're going to race, we have rain. I mean,
isn't that unbelievable out in California?
Everything's getting rained out. I mean, I've talked to a lot of the drivers, a lot of my friends, they're like, man, dude, are we ever going to get a chance to race? I go, I don't know. I go, as soon as the rain quits, I said, but it's just, I don't know. We're just,
Sal, time of the night where we're going to have to say goodbye because we're getting ready to start our NASCAR Hot Topic Sound Off. You're welcome to stay on if you want.
I can't share it. I'm at work. I got to go in and I got to start making some calls to find out why these guys, why they haven't shown up.
Okay, well, I'm glad you could make it on for our review part of the show, and we'll look forward to talking to you next Monday night, okay?
All right, everybody be safe. Have a good weekend, and don't fall for any, it's almost time, but don't fall for any April Fool's jokes.
Okay. Take care, Sal.
All right. Okay.
Bye-bye.
Okay, goodbye.
Okay, we are at the top of the hour, and that means it's time for our NASCAR Hot Topic Sound-Off. And joining me for tonight's Sound-Off segment is Jay Huseman. Welcome to the show, Jay.
Well, thank you, Sharon. And I have stayed off social media all day because I figure probably half or more of what's on there is probably fake and the April Fools anyway. So I just stayed off social media today.
Yeah, I just saw one on Twitter saying that Martin Truex has been suspended for two races, getting a penalty because of Richmond. And I know that's an April Fool's joke. No truth to that at all. So, yeah, they're out there.
Oh, I hadn't seen that one. So that was a good one, though, because there was a little bit of plausibility to that. He had a little bit of a temper tantrum, if you will, after the race, but nothing worth suspension, obviously.
I'm going to give a full disclosure here. I did not see any of the races this weekend, and that is no April Fool's joke. It is the truth. So it's going to be hard for me to comment on some things, but I did see a little bit of the highlights. Including some that you sent to me, Jay, so I appreciate you for doing that. But I'm going to let you go ahead and pick the hot topic that we'll get started with here tonight.
Well, as always, there's good and bad, and I want to go ahead and start with, and I say bad or a little bit negative, start with that so we can finish on more of a positive. The negative being the question of the final restart, Denny Hamlin jumping the start, as to whether or not he jumped the start. Obviously, that played into, mentioned Martin Truex's frustration. There's a restart with two to go. Some have questioned whether or not he jumped that restart and then used up his teammate going into turn one.
Okay. I've done a little bit of reading up on this. I do know that Elton Sawyer came out and said that they did look at the restart. It was very, very close. And they made the call, and that call turned out to be in Hamlin's favor. And Hamlin's also come out, I guess, explaining why he did what he did. He knew it was going to be a close call on NASCAR's part, but he said he was trying to protect the position that they gained on pit road. And I really think that the frustration for Martin Truex maybe comes with the fact that he lost the advantage that he had on pit road. Denny Hamlin's team was just flawless with that pit stop and put him in position, and Hamlin, I guess, was trying to protect that. I can't really comment. It really was a very close call. I have to say that NASCAR probably made the right call, given how close it was. NASCAR is in a position that they don't want to be in. They don't want to be calling strikes and balls on the drivers. So I think that they err on the side of caution on some of these calls, I think, because of that. And right, wrong, or indifferent, I would not want to be in NASCAR's place having to make those calls either. So Hamlin did what he had to do to win the race, and that's what he did. Now, knowing that, I will say that kind of gives me a little bit of a yellow flag that kind of pops up that says if NASCAR continues to make the call in the favor of the guy who makes that jump, it's going to get hard later on because it's going to depend on who your favorite driver is as to how fans are going to respond to it. if your favorite driver doesn't get that judgment call, then you know, fans are going to be upset. So it's an unenviable position that NASCAR is in, to say the least. It's a difficult spot to be in. And at some point, if it gets out of control, if it gets out of hand, the drivers themselves, if they allow it to get out of hand, it's going to force NASCAR to make that call. And that's the caution I want to put out there for fans. Trying to leave it in the driver's hands at this point. But if the drivers themselves allow it to get out of hand, it's going to force NASCAR to make those calls. So we'll see what happens coming up. But that's how I see it. Just, again, not having seen the race itself, I have to trust that NASCAR did what they thought was the right thing in this particular situation. So, Jay, I know you saw the race, so what are your thoughts?
Well, it's going to sound really funny here, but I'm going to argue with myself because I see both sides of it. So I'll start with watching the race. And I try to 100%, I don't always succeed at 100%, but take the driver who it is out of it as far as that. Because I really don't think that comes into play when it comes to NASCAR making these calls or decisions. I just don't buy that. So from my own opinion and perspective, though, I try to take that out of it. Watching the race, I did feel like that he jumped. Clint Bowyer in the broadcast booth initially said, too, hey, look, he got through the restart zone really good or quick. I don't remember the exact words he used, but kind of implied. They went back and kind of looked at it, and him and Kevin Harvick both felt like maybe he had jumped. Within two laps, which they said was about 40 seconds, NASCAR said they had reviewed it. And I don't know that anybody, at least at our level here, knows what that all entails, the SMT data, the time stamps and all this they talked about today on SiriusXM. And you're right, it was extremely close. So again, initially, watch it, I felt like he jumped. Listening on SiriusXM today throughout the day kind of changed my perspective, or at least understood that, I believe, two or three of the drivers, Tyler Reddick was one of them behind it, said all the drivers were playing the games. As they say, they're playing games on restart. That Martin Truex and Joey Logano were maybe laying back, which would cause any kind of movement to appear that Denny Hamlin jumped. I think I also heard that Truex might have spun his tires a little bit, which, again, they don't get the same start when they hit the line. It appears that the driver jumped. Now, going back and watching it, though, tonight on Race Hub, they had an aerial shot, which I hadn't seen. Again, there it really does appear that he began to accelerate prior to, and, you know, you mentioned it, just prior to the line. And I thought about it this way, though, of without cruise control, you're going down the highway at 65 miles an hour. Again, they don't have a one-button hit of speed like IndyCar does. How tough is it to maintain exactly 65? Especially you're coming to where you know you want to jump on it. So he did not stomp on the gas where you saw the car lunge in a clear. But I do believe he was slightly accelerating as he got to the line, hit the line, then stomps on it, okay? So you said it. Really tough call to make. I kind of have to go with Larry McReynolds. He talked about it several times on the radio shows and on Race Hub. Going to baseball, tie goes to the runner. I mean, it was that close. With referencing other sports, though, that is one where I have kind of a little bit of an issue of does NASCAR officiate the rules differently in the final part of a game, or, you know, in the final restart with, you know, for two laps to go. Had that penalty or had that situation happened early in the race, they could have maybe taken even more than the two laps to make that call on the restart and penalize, because they have the chance to get work back and get their spot back, or, you know, recover from it, if you will. you know, we talk about basketball, referees maybe not calling fouls as aggressively as they did early in the game, pass interference and whatever in football of, hey, game's on the line, it's go time, kind of let them play it out themselves. I hope that's not the case, because I'm of the opinion if the rule is there, black and white, you got to officiate it the same from beginning to end, start to finish. You can't ease up on it during any portion of the game or event. So I know it feels like I'm on both sides of it. It was a really tough call to have to make, period. Now, as you threw out, Denny Hamlin kind of implied, yeah, I pushed it to that absolute max and put NASCAR in that position where they had to make the call. I don't think you want to be doing that, because when they have to start making the call, normally it doesn't go in the driver's favor. So, and the more I thought about that, though, it's all about the championship and strategy and gaining points on everything you can do. Denny Hamlin already has a win. If they penalize him, puts him back, he still has a win. He's in the playoffs, assuming we don't get more than 16 drivers. Would he have pushed it to that limit if he were in a position of not having that win and a little further back in points, where if a good run is taken away from him, it might be more detrimental? So, detrimental, the name of this podcast. How about that?
How about that?
So there again of, you know, it's part of the strategy. And, you know, everybody talks about that. You get that first win in your bank, in the bank early in the season, you got a little bit of play on strategies and things you were willing to do the rest of the season, because you know you can fall back on that win to get you in the playoffs.
Yeah, I think you brought up a couple of really good points. One being that if Truex spun his tires, or if for some reason he didn't accelerate as quickly as Hamlin did, that could be a big part of the difference there. And maybe Hamlin didn't necessarily accelerate. It's just that Truex slowed down for whatever reason, whether he was holding back or whatever. So perception is sometimes misleading on some of those kind of things. And NASCAR has to make their best judgment call on it as it's happening. But the other thought that I've heard a couple of different things here. One is that Hamlin was the leader coming off of pit road, so he had control of the restart anyway. So going into that line, you know, it's really a tough call to make, because he's the one who controls the restart. Now they're supposed to stay together until they get into that restart box. But Hamlin does have control of that restart, which is why I think NASCAR went ahead and gave it to him, being that it was as close as it was. Like you said, in baseball, the runner gets the benefit of the doubt there. So I think that's what NASCAR did in this case. I don't know that. I'm just speculating based on what Elton Sawyer said. They looked at it. They saw that it was close, but they felt that there was nothing and had made the call in Hamlin's favor. The other part of that is there was another part, and all of a sudden it's not coming to me what it was. But the whole thing is that NASCAR is in a tough spot when it comes to these things. What I hope doesn't happen, as I said earlier, is I hope that NASCAR doesn't get into a spot where the drivers – force them to make that decision. NASCAR doesn't want to do that. They don't want to be put in that position. But sometimes the drivers, they're looking for every little bit of advantage that they can get. Hamlin said he felt like he was protecting the advantage that he had gained on pit road by doing what he did. He knew he was cutting it close, but that's why he did what he did. He was protecting the advantage that his pit crew gave him on pit road. So, and then I think you've got to look at it from the other perspective too. Hamlin's pit crew did a great job of gaining him that position. I think the 19 crew has to go back and look at and see what they did that lost the position for Truex. Now, Truex, as you guys know, I like Truex. I think he's a good driver. I like his style and everything. I know that drivers, and Truex is not the only driver that does this, but when they lose a chance to win a race like that, it's very disappointing, and they're not going to feel like talking about it afterwards. So they're going to make those interviews short and quick, and they want to get out of there. They're not happy with how things came down. Sal and I were talking about, to be a fly on the wall at Joe Gibbs Racing today when they kind of broke that down and walked through it. I'm sure Truex, after he had a chance to think about it, probably has a different perspective today than he does immediately after the race. But I always try to temper that with drivers because immediately after the race, before they've been able to see any replays or know exactly what's going on, sometimes their perspective is a little bit different than after they've had time to think about it. But your final thought about all of it?
Well, and there's still a lot that goes with it. Talking about Martin Truex, yeah, his frustration come initially from he was, I wouldn't say guaranteed to win it even in that final three-quarter lap. Joey Logano and Denny Hamlin were both closing in. Lap traffic was coming into play. They had a little bit better tires and car there at the end where Truex was getting tight and having a tough time passing. But he was within one lap of getting the white flag, which means that no matter what, the next flag would end the race. Yeah. So, yeah, caution come out, didn't get the white. They have that final restart. So he's frustrated there. Talk about coming off second off of pit road then. Losing that little bit of time, just that little bit of time, Hamlin getting him off pit road, frustrated. The jump of, or perceived jump on the restart, going into turn one, got leaned on by his teammate. Joey Logano then running third, also got under him, as did come Kyle Larson. And, Kyle Larson's interview, he said, I feel like I was the straw that broke the camel's back. By the time I got to Truex, he was so mad about everything else, that he just took it out on me. And I think that's a valid point. And Larson had no hard feelings about it. They kind of settled theirs in the final lap and just after. When the race was over and Truex sped up, he went to find Hamlin. He went by Larson and went to bumping on Hamlin's rear bumper. He really wasn't happy with a lot of things that happened with his teammate. But I also look at from NASCAR's side, their goal is to try and stay out of it, like you said. I know Dave Moody likes to see it. Nobody pays to see the umpire make calls or decisions. They want to see it clearly amongst the players of the event, in the event. Coda was last week. NASCAR got criticized or talked about a lot for calling 40-some, Sharon, help me out, was the off-track.
The penalty for cutting the corner.
There you go, cutting the course. There we go, that's the term I was looking for, thank you. That they over-enforced it during the Xfinity and truck race, and then we had four in the cup race. So this week, now they're being talked about for not making a call. So, like you said, a very unenviable position to be in. I will say this. I felt like at Richmond, they had the Xfinity race on Saturday and the Cup race on Sunday. I thought they were consistent from my viewpoint. I see it as they were consistently not making a call. They should have maybe, because I felt like there were four or five in the Xfinity series race. And even when they went back and showed a replay of it and NASCAR was reviewing the start, I expected them to make a call of jumping the restart based on just the video I could see. Again, we don't get the SMT data and all that. But there were four or five in the Xfinity race. Yeah, from my viewpoint of watching the broadcast, I felt like there was a jump and could have been called, as could have this one. Larry McReynolds said it. He said if they don't call it, he understands it. If they do call it, he understands it. That's how close it was, that you couldn't argue against it black and white of really went wrong one way or the other.
And that was the other point that I was going to make, and I totally forgot it, is the SMT data. if they've got the data there, can't they tell from the data if he's jump-started it?
From what I understood on SiriusXM, that, yes, the SMT data is there as far as if they accelerated, how much, how hard, you know, the turning left and right or whatever. But to especially in the two laps, to make that call so that the decision is made there at the track while the fans are there and the race is over versus 2 or 3 days later, that to match it up and timestamp it and get video paired up with it at the line, you know, to match the two of them up. And this was coming from Dave Moody. He believed that although you can see the SMT data, it's not time-stamped in parallel with the video, so they got to try and piece that together between the two.
Gotcha. Okay. Yeah, that was the other thought that I had, is why didn't they just go to the SMT data and make it black and white? But I guess there's too many angles to deal with that.
And again, that goes back to, you know, they improved the tech line and the tech process of that. We don't want to have to wait till Tuesday or Wednesday to find out if the one at the track was the official winner. They do a tech process now, normally within, I'd say, 30 minutes to maybe an hour after the race, if that, to finalize tech and declare the winner official. So that fans at the track, then they leave, they don't find out Monday morning, or again, in the past, it's been Tuesday or Wednesday before any penalties come out, that's when we were finding out the official results.
Right. Okay. Excuse me. You caught me mid-yawn there. Let's go ahead and move on to our next hot topic, because I know we've got a couple others here that we want to get to, too.
Well, it said that was kind of the negative or the bad. The good, and I think this overall was a huge success, sounded like from everybody across the industry, was the use of the wet weather tire and package on a banked oval in a points race. And I'll clarify all that. They've used the wet weather tires on road courses before. They also used it at an oval, but that was at North Wilkesboro during the All-Star race. So it was a non-points race, and that's a little bit flatter track, whereas Richmond has more banking. So some huge strides there. Again, they know there's things they can improve on. We'll talk about that of things down the road. But for what they did on Sunday night, I thought went really great. A lot of people were actually saying that the best racing was in those first parts on the slick treaded tires, the wet weather tires.
Hey, again, I didn't see the race, so I have a hard time being able to really comment on it. All I can go off of is what I've heard from other people and what NASCAR is saying. Jim France, you know, the fact that they were able to save some time and not delay the race because of the rain, I think was a big plus, especially since this race started at night. I think that was a good move to have some wet weather tires available so that they could easily change over their tires and get into the wet rain situation. You know, I didn't see the race, so I don't know how the race played out. But I think that's a big plus if they were able to save a weather delay, because by the time you delay the race, you get the jet tires out there to dry off the track and everything. When the drivers can dry off the track with their cars, I think is a huge plus. But that's about the only thing I feel like I can really comment on, because I really didn't see the other part of the race, or any part of the race for that matter. So, but I think the fact that they can avoid a delay in the race, I think that's a huge plus. Jay, what were your thoughts?
Again, absolutely a plus all the way around from my vantage point, and as I said, of the industry as a whole. They estimated it saved them about an hour or more And this is at Richmond, you know, the bank track can drive pretty quickly, so, and a short track. So for saving an hour of starting time, they actually did start, I'd say maybe 5-10 minutes at most, that they were delayed from the original start time. Now, again, this is, we saw it at COTA a couple years back. They will not run in the rain, any kind of heavy rain, even on a road course again, because of the things they learned from COTA of there is a point of too much rain. When you're talking on an oval, it's a little, and especially a banked oval like Richmond, that, you know, it's a little more tricky. But so they got the track to the point where I think they did run about 10 laps under caution, started the race, ran about 10 under caution, then turned them loose for 30 laps, I believe, before they pulled the through the competition yellow. Then they came down and did what they call the non-competitive pit stops. And that was because, again, at the bottom, pit roads at the bottom of the hill, that was not as dry as what the track was. Kudos to the tire that Goodyear brought with the treaded tire, the way it worked. The drivers, they ran those 30 laps without any kind of incident. There's a little bit of shuffling, you know, maybe a little bumping and banging, but the drivers did a great job with it. And like I said, a lot of people actually felt like that was maybe the best portion of racing was in that section. And that's where I said some of the things they want to look at, the when they did non-competitive pit stops, they went back to racing. And at the end of the stage, they wanted to mandated that they go from the treaded tires, the wet weather tires, to the slicks. And they did another non-competitive pit stop. In the future, their hope is to, at that point, one, they'll look at getting pit road drier quicker so that they can eliminate the non-competitive. And also, though, put it into the hands of the drivers of, hey, we're starting on wet weather. Whenever the caution comes out, we're not going to throw a competition caution. It'll either be a natural one or the stage break. And it'll be on the drivers and the teams to determine when they want to go. And that's what we've seen on road courses. And it comes out really interesting. That goes back to when I was at Road America, to see one driver have the advantage of the treaded tires. But as the track dried up, they were faster, but they had to keep searching for water. They were going offline the racing groove because they were trying to find water and keep those tires wet, because they burn up really quick if they're running in the dry versus the slick. And to see the different strategies, man, I can't think of his name. I know Michael McDowell is the one that won that, and he was on the – I take that back, not Michael McDowell. Either Michael McDowell or Brandon Gaughan. Driver for Penske, the Canadian driver, and I can't think of his name off the top of my head. But anyway, he had switched over to the slicks and was gaining – because those treaded tires were starting to give up and the track dried and you couldn't find the wet anymore. So, I mean, the gap was decreasing by a lot per lap. You know, you talk about pitting for fresh tires, the advantage you have is no different. So to be able to see that kind of strategy come into play, I think just adds another level of excitement. And that's the goal that they talked about throughout the day today of eliminating the non-competitive pit stops, you know, initially, the competition yellow, that they don't have to throw it just to check tires and stuff. And from what we've seen, you know, think back a few years ago, we wouldn't even say racing any kind of wet weather rain. They started on the road courses. We've seen it on ovals. Now we've seen it on a banked oval and doing it for a points race. The advancement is there. You know, the technology is there. And I think they're doing it the right way, taking it slowly, step by step, making sure they got all their ducks in a row before they go to the next level.
Yeah, you got to applaud them for that, for sure. I wanted to just mention here, too, the quote from Elton Sawyer. He said, first of all, credit to NASCAR CEO Jim France. This was his vision. Elton Sawyer, of course, is NASCAR Senior Vice President of Competition. And post-race, he said, a couple of years ago, Jim France tasked the R&D Center in Goodyear to come up with a tire that we could run in the damp, and tonight was a success. we were able to get the tires started pretty much on, the race started pretty much on time. And the guys did a great job with the tire. Goodyear did a phenomenal job. And he goes on to say later on, unlike road courses, when pit road is wet, where we could allow the teams to make the decisions on whether to put dries or wets on, Sawyer explained, on the short ovals, we're still not in a place where we need to feel comfortable in doing that. We're looking out for the safety, and this is only our third event that we've actually run wet weather tires. One of them I know was at the North Wilkesboro All-Star event. So he goes on to say, so we have another data point. That's one thing we want to work hard on, is to be able to start the race, put all the competition in the team's hands, and the strategy, when to put tires on and when to take them off, and the sanctioning body not be in the middle of that decision-making. I think we'll get there sooner rather than later. So this was a big step in that direction. So, again, NASCAR had to make the call this time for the sake of safety, but they're moving in the right direction to put that decision into the hands of the teams somewhere down the road sometime soon, sooner rather than later. So I think that's all good. So did you have any other comments you wanted to make there, Jay?
No, again, the advancement is great, and I think that the direction they're going, like I said, I applaud them for taking it step by step. I think the big thing they did learn this time round was maybe during those 10 laps where they did start under caution or whatever to work on pit road a little bit more, because that would lead to that competitive pit stops, as well as then put it in the driver's hands of, or the teams, I guess, of, you know, the team's decision as to when to switch over. It's at their discretion instead of NASCAR's. In this case, they said, we're on the wet, everybody run them. We're going to the slicks, everybody run them, to take that back out of their hands. But at this point, that was the right call. I think it was the right call because, as you mentioned, this was the first time on a banked oval, only the third time they've done it overall. So they want to make sure they're doing it safely and smartly before they progress to that next level. So all the way around, I think it was a huge success.
What's our next hot topic?
Oh, let's see. I know I threw a couple of them up there today. Oh, you threw one up there, too, in between. Should Richmond have two races? I didn't see that one. It popped out. That one popped up. Well, we'll talk about that. Richmond is one of those. Should Richmond have two races on the schedule? Of all the tracks that do have two, I think Richmond is a good one to have two at. I'd hate to pick out the start. You know, ultimately, I would like to see them run 36 points races on 36 different tracks. Is that ever going to happen? I don't foresee it. I really don't. I mean, there's just not enough tracks. And I know it costs, you know, what it costs to have the track. You only have two events, NASCAR events. They have other activities throughout the year, but that's their bread and butter. I mean, that's what they're designed for. So I understand having some that have two events. Richmond is one of them. I do think is a good one to have two on. I know my opinion on the racing varies. A lot of people haven't liked the short track races as of recent with the next gen or the Gen 7 car. But, I mean, again, I thought there was great racing on Saturday, so I'm okay with them having to, especially since a lot of the other tracks, even if they're individual tracks, are more than a mile and a half. I don't want to give up a short track.
Okay. Well, I heard a little bit of the podcast with Jordan Bianche and Jeff Gluck, and I think he's saying that in order to bring in other tracks, we've got to give up something that's on the current schedule. So he feels that one of those races should be Richmond. Now, he says a frequent debate within NASCAR over the past few years is whether Richmond Raceway is track worthy of hosting two Cup Series dates. The Virginia short track has struggled with attendance, and its races too often lack competitiveness due to strategy and track position being the primary factor in the results. So again, be careful what you ask for, because last week we were talking about how the tires and tire wear and strategy was what everybody was wanting in racing, and now he's saying it makes for lackluster racing. So I guess it depends on which side of the fence you sit on. But the attendance, I wanted to address that for just a minute. It was Easter Sunday. I think NASCAR made a good call by making the race later in the day on Easter Sunday. But I think that that may have affected the attendance of the race as well, holding the race on Easter Sunday, and I don't know that that's a fair comparison. I'd have to look at what the stats are for attendance overall, say, the last 3 or 4 years. But I would say that the holiday certainly had an impact on that race this weekend. Anyway, I guess if they want to bring in other tracks, though, like they've been talking about, they're going to have to let go of some of these tracks where they do have two races on the schedule. And especially if those races are struggling attendance-wise, it makes sense that they would maybe want to go to a different track in where they can get better attendance. Sometimes I think having two races on the schedule does affect the attendance of both of those races, whereas if they have one race, they might get better attendance versus people kind of splitting their time between one of two. So just some thoughts that went through my mind as it relates to this particular discussion.
And there is a, you know, that's that aspect of it. Again, I'm going from the fan side. You're talking about the attendance and market areas. I fully understand that. My hope would be then, though, that, like I said, they're trading a short track for a short track. I wasn't real happy when Road America kind of got shuffled out as a road course. I was happy to see Iowa Speedway come in. So having given up one Richmond for the Iowa race, I'd have been all in favor of, you know, new market. Mm-hmm. Give them that opportunity. I think they've deserved it. Just throwing it out there just for fun of another one that maybe they could, if at all possible, Five Flags Speedway, Pensacola, Florida. I don't think that's a big enough track of and equipped yet for NASCAR level event, but that is a track I'd like to see. Talk about the Xfinity have run, Myrtle Beach, South Boston. I don't know. This is one I said I was off social media today. I don't know if this one is true. I saw something with Memphis Motorsports Park, and I used to have season tickets when the Truck Series and Xfinity ran there. I know there was talk about them putting in the safer barriers and investing the money, and that came today, though, so that is one I will say. I don't know if that was an April Fool's thing or not, but have to watch down the road if we hear any more about Memphis Motorsports Park. I thought that was a great facility. That was when I first started with you, Sharon. I think that's one of the first ones that I went to as a representative for Fan for Racing. Todd Gillen and Harrison Burton were the two battling for the championship that year. So some great racing. I know we got to see that's where back when Kevin Harvick was running full-time in both series because he flew in just before the driver's meet and had to start from the back, put on a show. Brad Keselowski had done the same with the Truck Series. So something like that, like I said, if you're trading a short track for a short track, yes, I'm in favor of it, and that includes even Bristol if it comes to that. Because I understand from the marketing aspect, you know, we're talking about doing Coliseum races. If one like that ever becomes a points race, I'd be in favor of that. I'm just saying don't take away a short track to give it to another mile and a half.
Kind of reading further into this article, and they're saying that NASCAR options are really limited, but the sanctioning body is exploring adding an international race to the 2025 schedule with Mexico as the leading candidate. A new circuit added to the schedule would necessitate current racing being jettisoned. So, again, the question comes, how do you make room for an international race? You've got to let go maybe of, to the point that you made, they took Racing America out of the schedule to add the Chicago Street Race. You know, maybe if they take Richmond for the Mexico race, maybe that's what they're going to do here. Now, I don't know if that Mexico race is a short track or what kind of a track that is, but it's a lot for NASCAR to consider. And they do take things in, you know, they have to take the bigger picture into consideration, like our fans attending both of those races and filling up the stands. If they're not, they might be better off going to an international event like Mexico, where they can crowd in the stands and make it a big event. So I think another part of this equation is the short track racing package. Did they use the short track package at Richmond this weekend?
Yes, that was in play. I believe Dover and Phoenix, no, Dover and Bristol are the two where that short track package doesn't come into play. So yes, it was part of the wet weather short track package all in one.
Okay.
And I can't,
so that's part of the equation here too.
I was going to add to what you said there. I can't remember the name of the course in Mexico. When the Xfinity Series ran there, it was a road course. I believe both of the ones that they look at in Canada, Circuit Gilles-Villeneuve and Canadian Tire Motorsports Park, are all road courses because the Indy cars run the road course, and they're using tracks like that. Not to say that there isn't a short track that they would use in Mexico, but not that I know of. And the one they used for the Xfinity Series when they ran down there was a road course.
Okay, so that's going to be interesting to see, because I think the fans have to decide what they want in racing, though, too. I mean, I like the strategy type of races. I like the tire wear and having those decisions more in the hands of the driver's management of the tire wear and the strategy put together by the crew chief. I like those kind of races. It's not everybody's cup of tea, but you know, as a sport, I think we have to decide what we want for racing. We did see Bubba Pollard come from the back. Well, I guess that was the Xfinity Series race. But wasn't there somebody in this race, too, that came from the back and raced their way to the front at Richmond? I think, you know, if drivers are struggling to pass, I think they have to ask themselves, why are giving you the tire wear that's supposed to help you be able to pass with the fresher tires? I remember Chandler Smith talking about that. The fresher tires were definitely a big advantage, and that's part of what that pit call by his crew chief is what helped him to win that race. The pit call in this case for Denny Hamlin helped him gain advantage on off of pit road to get into the lead. So I think that's what we want in racing, isn't it? So I don't know. I didn't see the race, so it's hard for me to say whether it was a good race or a not good race. Did you think it was a good race?
Oh, very, very good. And I don't know as far as official starting position, but after that competition yellow and the next caution, there was that differing strategies because it was breaking up that middle stage, whether they were going to pit two times, three times in the thirds, two times, or if you could really push it into one. And it was a matter of, and Denny Hamlin was one of them that did stay out lap or two longer than everybody else, just have that little bit of advantage. That put him in position of top five when that final restart came out. They were in position to then capitalize off pit road. There were a couple of teams, Todd Gilland, I'm trying to think, Kyle Larson actually got burned because he was doing the multiple pit stops with the three then, because again, he felt he had the fastest car come in, pit, gain it back because he had one of the faster cars. Just then another caution came out and it happened to burn him. He had to gain his track position back. So, and there again, then you push harder because you know you got put behind by that. You got to start at the tail end. You push a little bit harder, use your tires just to get back into the position you were, and then you're at the disadvantage. So it's whether or not you can make up that ground. I find that an intriguing part of a race, yes, that it's not just, you know, I mean, how often do we see it? And I feel really bad for Martin Truex, but we talk about at Bristol with the tire wear. Ty Gibbs, in my opinion, had the fastest and best car all day. He finished, I believe, like 18th to 20th because he burned up his tires. You know, that's part of it. It's not always the fastest car wins.
Yeah, I totally agree with you. I think that's the kind of racing we want to see happening on the tracks. So we'll see what happens, what NASCAR decides to do, because it is all speculation right now. But I thought it was interesting that Jordan Bianche brought that up and kind of gave us a little insight that NASCAR is looking at an international race next season. So they've got to open up a spot for that to happen. And so he kind of feels, I guess, that Richmond should be having one race versus two, and it might even help their attendance. So what's our next hot topic?
Well, you mentioned the name there, and we'll talk about it, and he did start from the back. Bubba Pollard made his Xfinity Series debut at Richmond for Junior Motorsports. And I'll do a quick rundown, as I know you said you didn't get to watch stuff. In practice, he had the fastest time. But being that it's not a full-time team, he had to go first out in qualifying. Didn't go so well, so started from the very back. Came back, and I want to say top five. I don't have that right off the top of my head.
He finished six.
Okay, just outside the top five. Put on a heck of a show, in my opinion. And I know we talk about road courses, bringing in road course ringers. I think some of these teams that use a variety of drivers throughout the year need to look at some of these late model drivers like that of short track aces and bringing them in, because Bubba Pollard showed what he could do.
That's going to go with this, Jay, is that Bubba Pollard is a late model racer ace, if you will. And they brought him in for this race. And I thought it was a good race for Junior Motorsports to bring him for his debut into NASCAR. And we've been talking about it. The tire wear, the strategy calls, that's late model racing. And he is very good at it. I was really happy to see him race his way through the field. It kind of dispels the notion that you can't do that. He was able to do that. This is kind of racing that he does every week at the racetrack, and he did it well in a stock car in the Xfinity Series. So I think it was great, and I think it's really good that NASCAR is allowing that to happen as well, because I think we've got a lot that we can learn from some of these late model stock car drivers. And how they race on these short tracks. I'd like to see more short track aces come into the field and see if they can do for short tracks what the aces did for road courses. because let's face it, and Sal and I talked about this just briefly earlier in the show, that type of short track racing really plays into the hands of the veteran drivers. They've been there, they've done that, and they know how to do it well. And that was very apparent at the race at Bristol as well. And you brought up the situation between Ty Gibbs and his teammates. You know, they let him go by them, but he eventually wore out his car and wasn't there at the end to really be able to contend. They were there at the end to be able to contend. And so what NASCAR has right now is they've got a few veteran drivers that kind of know how to deal with this type of situation, but they've got a lot of newer drivers.
I lost you, Sharon. I'm not hearing you. I got no audio. Okay, I just got a message. Sharon did go off the air there, so she's calling back in. We still got 10 minutes there. Just to pick up where she was talking about that of seeing the veteran drivers when it comes to short tracks having that advantage, that these late model drivers, that's what they're used to. And I know at the Cup level, Harrison Burton hasn't been successful, but the short tracks are some of those. I mentioned seeing him and Todd Dillon race at Memphis Motorsports Park. That was one of the things I noticed about them is even at the ARCA Menards East level, seeing which drivers right now, Jesse Love's doing it in the Xfinity Series, being able to manage your car and manage your tires so that you have something left at the end when it's go time, you know, with whether it be 25 to go or 10 to go, coming back and be able to hang with them. Sharon, are you back on yet?
I am back. I'm sorry I got cut off there. And disconnected from the show, so I had to call back in. But it sounds like you carried out the rest of that conversation. I don't know at what point I got cut off.
Yeah, I tried to pick up. You were just talking about the veterans on the short track that know how to manage it, a lot of these late model drivers, and I used Harrison Burton and Todd Gillen. I went back to Memphis Motorsports Park of seeing them manage their equipment so that in the final run they have something left to work with that they haven't burned their car up.
Mm-hmm. The drivers that have done that late model stock car racing, they're going to have the advantage. But there's a lot of newer drivers that came in through sim racing, let's say, or through, you know, other venues of racing that they came in. They're not going to know as much about tire wear and all of that. So I just think that NASCAR would benefit from having more drivers like Bubba Pollard race on some of these short tracks and give them feedback on what they can do to make it even better. But I think they prove to the other drivers that they can pass. I think the real point here is that there has to be a belief system from the drivers that are there that they can do that. And if they see a driver like Bubba Pollard come in and do it, then they know that they've got work to do on their end in order to be able to be better at those short tracks.
I will say this, when it comes to the Bubba Pollard story, we've seen it. We talk about the road course aces. Even when they come in with top teams, it's not always just a guarantee. We did see Shane Van Gisbergen come into the Cup Series win in his first race. But that's one of those of meshing with the team, making a transition to another level, no matter what it be. I was excited to hear the announcement for Bubba Pollard. Being from the Southeast, you know, you can't talk mm-hmm. about racing, especially late model racing, without hearing his name and his list of accomplishments. I think achieved even more than what I expected, honestly. I know Junior Motorsports is a great team, but again, it's a fifth car that they only field once in a while. You're making the transition from just the super late model up to the Xfinity Series heavier car. So I didn't have such high expectations. And truthfully, again, it had qualifying not bit him like it did. What he could have done racing up front with those guys versus having to, as he said, race his way to get back up to the front, and then he's got nothing left because he had to work so hard to get back in that position. Had he started up there, I think you could have seen him win in his debut, like we saw with Shane Van Gisbergen on the street course. I mean, he was that good. Like I said, he had the fastest time in practice.
Yes. That's a very real possibility. And like I say, I think a lot of it has to do with building a belief system among some of the drivers that have less experience with the late model race, this style of late model racing. I think benefits the sport as a whole by bringing drivers like Bubba Pollard into it. So I like it.
I will say this, and I don't know if it was his mindset or not. He's, I believe, 37 years old. He knows these opportunities are going to be one-off. A lot of times when you see a driver get an opportunity like this, they think, and I don't want to throw any other names out there because I don't want to put that on anybody, but we have seen it where when they get those one or two opportunities, they absolutely go balls to the wall because they think they got to showcase that. and win the race in order to get another opportunity. The fact that he is 37, he knows he's not going to get a Cup Series ride or, you know, whatever. He
right.
took it for what it was. One race just to show his talent, and he showed it by what he did versus overdriving the car, trying to do too much in his one or two opportunities, thinking that's the only way he's going to get another opportunity. That may have come into play in his thought process. I don't know. Like I said, I just feel like we've seen some other drivers maybe try and do too much in limited starts because they feel like that's their only window to advance.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Now, I am going to make a real quick announcement because I think we do have maybe one or two other topics to hit on here. More topic to hit on. We're going to go off the air at exactly 10:30 a.m. or p.m. Eastern time, but we are going to continue to record beyond that time the rest of our conversation so that it's available as part of the bonus overtime material on our podcast. What's going to happen is when Jay and I finish here, I'll go out on Facebook and Twitter to let you know that the podcast is now available. Then you can go to the player that we have over at BamfaRacing.com and fast forward to the two-hour mark in order to hear the rest of the conversation. So don't want anybody to be caught off guard or not know how they can hear the rest of the conversation. And so that's why we make this announcement, especially for our first-time listeners at this point of the show. So with that, was there anything more that you wanted to say on our topic here, the current topic?
No. Like I said, I was just thoroughly impressed with it, even above what I thought maybe possible expectations. So great to see. I hope we see, like you said, more of it.
Yeah, I think it would be fantastic. Okay, let's go ahead and go to our last topic. I think this is the last topic, unless you know of something that I'm not saying. But it goes back to kind of where we started the conversation with the final restart of the race. There was a little incident, I guess, between Bubba Wallace and Kyle Larson. I guess Bubba Wallace didn't actually hit Larson, but there was enough air there that it caused Larson to lose momentum, I guess. And so he apologized to him immediately after the race. And so I wanted to get your thoughts about that.
First off, you mentioned going till 9:30 a.m. I like to talk a lot, but I'm glad you changed that to 9:30 p.m. I like to talk a lot, but a 12-hour broadcast, that's a tough one to do.
Slip of the tongue there.
Yeah. The Bubba Wallace says Kyle Larson incident, and that is actually what brought out that caution with two laps to go. And I know, Sharon, you said you didn't see it. There was contact. Kyle Larson acknowledged as he got into the corner, his car went up the track, and he had to check up to gather it up. Bubba Wallace was only a foot or two behind him as Kyle Larson checked up to gather it up. Bubba Wallace was coming along, expecting them to both be at speed up to the wall, so did get into him and turned him. As Kyle Larson said, he said, "I started to spin out. Wallace just came along and finished it off, holding no grudge whatsoever." I wanted to give a shout-out to Bubba Wallace because that is one of those of you call a racing incident. There was nothing Bubba could have done but locked his car up or turned himself into the wall other than to bump into the guy in front of him who was already loose and turning a little bit. Like I said, Kyle Larson was gathering it up. He's got that kind of talent, but somebody coming right behind you, there just wasn't time to not get into him, and that little bit of nudge was more than Larson could handle. Was able to manage to keep it off the wall going towards the infield, so no harm, no foul. But I thought it was big of Bubba Wallace to immediately come over and apologize for that because it really, I don't think anybody could realistically say that was his fault. Although, again, you hear from the fans on SiriusXM throughout the day, there were people that wanted to say that Bubba Wallace did that so his teammate or his team owner, Denny Hamlin, would have a shot at winning. I say malarkey to that, but I won't even go into that. I can't even believe that came out today, but it's ridiculous. Dave Moody ate somebody up on that one. He's like, what driver running fourth possibly with a chance to have a chance of a top five finish, which that team needs? If a caution comes out without him being the caution, he could be the one that get off pit road good and have a shot at the win. Nobody's going to take themselves out of a race, you know, from fourth place to let somebody else win. It's just ridiculous.
Right.
I'm sorry. I did get off on it. I'll let it go.
No, I hear you. It sometimes does get ridiculous. Okay. Now, you gave me a little bit of insight there too, but as you were talking, I was recalling, remember a couple of years ago, Bubba Wallace and Kyle Larson got into an incident where Bubba really wanted to fight, and Kyle Larson was like, hands up, he did not want to get engaged in any kind of a fight with Bubba Wallace. Do you remember that?
Yeah, and they referenced that, and I don't know if that's part of why Bubba Wallace did. You know, and that one, he obviously felt he was right.
I think it's a growth curve. I think it's a growth curve for Bubba Wallace.
Exactly.
And a respect level for Kyle Larson. It tells me that they had a good conversation after that event, and that Bubba Wallace has come full circle with a growth curve there, made the apology, even though Larson didn't see it as anything egregious on Wallace's part. Larson, I got to give a shout out to Kyle Larson. I wish more drivers could be like Kyle Larson and recognize that some of these things are just racing incidents. They're not intentional. I'm out to get you kind of things all the time. Sometimes it really is just a racing incident, not intentional. And I think Bubba proved that by going to apologize to Larson. But Larson had already recognized it. We need more Kyle Larsons out there on the track who understand that those things do happen in racing sometimes. And I wanted to give him a shout out as well. But I think this also speaks to a huge growth curve for Bubba Wallace as well. And it shows how much respect he has for Kyle Larson by taking the initiative and going to him and apologizing. I did not see it. I can't speak to, I guess, what I thought happened just based on some other things that I heard, because I didn't see it. So, but I can tell you from what I have heard, it sounds to me just the fact that he went to apologize to him speaks volumes.
Well, and you hit on something there, and I'll come back to but I wanted to do the shout-out for Bubba Wallace, and you said it. It's that growth thing of he wanted to be clear that that was not intentional. And, again, Kyle Larson was fully aware of that, as was everybody. All the broadcasters said, hey, there's nothing that could have been done there. There was no foul there of any kind of intention or anything. But you're right. When it comes to Kyle Larson, if you saw his interview reference Martin Truex, you know, he obviously wasn't happy because he felt like Truex took out his frustration of other frustrations on him, but he said he understood it. And I think that goes back to when you talk about dirt track racing. I mean, it still takes the right driver, but when you're racing against somebody, the same drivers, two, three times in a weekend or 70 times through a year that the sprint cars run, you know, you got to take it for what it was, even if it wasn't intentional or whatever, let it be at that race and move on. Go on to the next night, fresh, clean slate. And Larson is one of those, as a whole anyway, you don't see carry any kind of grudge to the next week. I call it a pure racer. You know, somebody that goes out the next night or the next week saying, okay, I'm going to find this guy, I'm going to hit him, I'm going to take him out. That is not a pure – you're not out there to race anymore. You're out there to take somebody out. You're not there to race, you know, that your whole goal. And Larson is one of those that just wants to race. Excuse me. Doesn't care about – not to say he doesn't care about, but isn't going to hold on to whatever happened last week because it was last week. You know, now – if it happens multiple times throughout a season or, you know, frequently, yeah, you're going to have a little bit of an issue. But he really, truly does just want to race for that night, that race, and leave it at that.
Well, I've been saying for couple of years now that we need more respect on the racetrack. I think we're seeing it. Larson gave a lot of respect to Martin Truex Jr. By understanding his frustration and that he wasn't doing anything to intentionally hurt Larson. He knew he was frustrated not at Larson, but at his teammate. And he just was in the wrong place at the wrong time for Truex's frustration. I'm not condoning the frustration or that that's the way you handle it, but I think Larson had a great deal of respect for Martin Truex to have that kind of understanding. And so I'm one of those people that have been crying, we need more respect out there on the track. This is it, folks. This is what respect looks like. So I have to, again, applaud both Wallace and Larson for showing that kind of respect on the racetrack.
Well, and there again, Larson, you know, as he got to Martin Truex in the final lap, felt like he banged into him, door checked him down the side. That next corner, Kyle returned the favor, ran him up, and then after the finish line, I mean, let him know he wasn't happy, but that was the end of it for him. You know, in the post-race, he said he understood it. You know, he's not going to take it necessarily, but he expressed that and drove him back the same way. But then it was done. Like I said, there was no, oh, we'll take care of this next week, or I owe him one, or nothing like that. It was done.
Truex knew he had it coming to him. That's why he didn't go to Larson.
Yeah, no, he was still pretty upset with Hamlin because he went up and thumped him two or three times before he had to pull onto pit road.
Yeah. And I'm not condoning that either. I don't condone drivers using their race cars, and I'm a fan of Martin Truex, but I don't think that's the way you handle those types of situations. And I know he didn't do anything to cause harm or damage. He was just giving him a little bump to let him know he wasn't happy. But don't use the race car to do that.
No, it certainly, I mean, you know, it's always one of those, you never know what can happen, but it was just a couple of love taps, or a little more aggressive than a love tap on the rear bumper. He didn't spin him out or anything. So, again, just express that frustration. We've certainly seen worse to the level of being penalized. But this, I hope that NASCAR doesn't. I understand that, you know, the not using the car, there again, you don't want to put them in a position where they got to make a call. The frustration was expressed, and I know we didn't get to that, but I want to bring that up real quick as we wrap up the incident. I sent you the video from the Xfinity Series race. Who did I say it was? Joey Gase and Dawson Cram.
Oh. Dawson Cram, yeah.
Through a fender,
yes.
You know. Did you get a chance to watch that video?
Yes, I did watch that video. Do you want me to
like
comment
I said,
first,
I'm,
or do you want to say something?
Well, I just wanted to say I understand NASCAR is probably going to have to take some, I'm hoping just maybe monetary fine, and I'm sure that, you know, Joey Gase is aware of that. Both of them are now selling T-shirts off the incident, though. I saw this on Race Hub tonight. I don't know if you saw it.
No.
Joey Gase's is that, oh, you want the souvenir? Get by the T-shirt. And his one of them is going for McGruff crime fighting. The money raised from those T-shirts are going to go to that. And I don't remember what the other Dawson's was. His T-shirt says, sometimes you're the windshield, sometimes you're the fender, and it shows the fender onto his windshield instead of a bug, and it's the fender. And his, too, is for a charity program of some sort. So hopefully they both put it behind. Again, I firmly believe that Joey Gase is going to receive some type of fine or penalty because he did walk down onto the hot track, which is a no-no, and that's a safety reason. As I told you earlier, I would actually give a certain amount to pay his fine because it's entertaining. We saw that. I understand you got to be careful with the safety aspect, but that's kind of what NASCAR was built on too, of seeing that emotion. You know, I don't want to see him take emotion out of it. I don't want to see it cross the line of fighting and slamming cars or whatever. You know, in this case, there was no real damage done. You know, we look back at numerous videos of people throwing helmets. Well, the helmet cost a lot of money there. That fender was already broken, busted, so it wasn't going to cost him anything he was going to use anyway. So, and you know, we talked about it. If you ever tried to throw just a piece of paper, it doesn't exactly fly well. I thought he did a good job of throwing the fender.
Yeah, it was amazing. I do have a couple of comments, though, just based on the little clip that I saw. And you're right. It is an absolute no-no. When you are involved in an incident, you're supposed to go with the safety officials into the safety vehicle and not go on the track. What I was kind of surprised about is where were the safety officials when he went and pulled that fender off of a car? I thought that they would have kind of redirected him toward the safety vehicle at that point. And then when he started walking toward the track, there was nobody there to kind of stop him from doing that either. So Joey Gase knows better. I know he knows better. Again, this is one of those situations where the frustration gets the best of you and you do something that you know better. It was entertaining to the point that you're making, Jay, but it is a safety issue. There were cars driving on that track, and as we all know, the visibility is not that great sometimes for the drivers. And so he was putting his life in his own hands by walking out on the track. If one of those drivers did not see him and they hit him, it would have been extremely dangerous for him. So I think NASCAR probably will give him somewhat of a penalty. We'll see what happens Tuesday or Wednesday is when those penalties do come out. But I'm wondering, where were the safety officials? How come they let him take that fender off? It's not his job to do that. He should leave that for the people that are there to handle that type of a thing. But he clearly had an intention to do something with that fender, but nobody really stopped him from doing it either. So I'm scratching my head a little bit about that. Was it entertaining? Yeah, I remember seeing Ward Burton throw his fire shoes or whatever you call them.
There you go, the shields, yep.
Yeah, the fire shields for his shoes. At somebody, I think it was Dale Jr., and
yep.
He was pretty hot at the time that he did that. So sometimes drivers do let their emotions get the best of them. I've seen people throw helmets, but NASCAR was trying to prevent those kind of things from happening with the safety rules that they have in place, and that obviously there was a breakdown in that this weekend. So your follow-up thought.
Yeah, and there, I understand there's a line, like you said, of going down to where the cars are rolling around, although it be under caution speed. I'm trying to remember, because I think it was last year or the year before, Tyler Reddick threw his helmet at Austin Dillon. I don't know of how far you can go before you get in trouble. You know, we see them when they walk out a little ways, and whether they give the finger or wave or whatever they do. Kurt Busch, think back to him and Jimmy Spencer patting his butt, you know. So that's where I said, I don't know where the line is, how close you can get to the car. A helmet, like I said, a helmet has some weight you can throw from a distance. For him to throw the fender, he had to get a little bit closer. But you mentioned the safety workers. Think about it when there's an incident on pit road. You have the people around that are going to step in when they have to. Obviously, they knew what his intent was, but if you got two or three guys trying to restrain the one that's mad, now you're putting three more safety workers at risk. Because if they have say tackle him or hold him, now they're also at risk because they're watching him and taking care of him and not where the cars are. So I think that's kind of where it were of, you know, if that's what he's going to do is throw it, let him do it, accept the fine or whatever. Don't put more people at risk by having three or four people that close to the cars. You know, I mean, that might be a perspective, like I said. When you see it on pit road, there's always that group there of once, you know, a punch gets thrown or somebody goes down, they're there to break it up, but they're not going to try and stop it and put themselves at risk, you know, in the process as well.
Right. That is a good point. I was just thinking maybe he could have been redirected or, you know, taken by the elbow or whatever and redirected back toward the safety vehicle before he got that fender off of the car. But yeah, you bring up a good point. You don't want to put other people at risk So you let it play out.
Honestly, I'd have to say if I were one of the safety workers, even if I were kind of have my hand on him and guiding him, if he goes to rip the fender, I'd be like, I want to see what happens here. You know, what's he going to do with that?
Yeah. But that could have been really dangerous, too. I mean, he nailed it the way he threw it. But what if that corner of that thing had gone through the window net or something? And, you know, I know the diver is pretty protected, but it could have cut his hand if he had his gloves off during the caution. I mean, there's a number of things that could have happened. He might have been taking a drink out of his cup of water during that time. I think there's a lot of things that could have gone wrong there. They didn't, but NASCAR's got to think about the safety of everybody when they look at these types of situations, I guess. Entertaining,
and,
yes.
And that goes back to, you mentioned that, and I think I don't remember who was involved, but that was one of the ones where even just that, talk about the three love taps tricks gave Hamlin, you know, if you're talking about the winner getting ready to celebrate, unbuckling, like you said, taking a drink, or possibly even getting ready to take the steering wheel off, there is that risk. That's why NASCAR doesn't want to see it get out of line, or, you know, I'm sure at a very minimum they're going to talk to Joey Gase. Like I said, I firmly believe there will be a penalty coming just by how far down the track he had to get to throw it. And you mentioned it. I know that's what they talked about today. The highest risk was probably for himself of as you throw that slice in your own hands. So, he probably put himself at more possible risk than anything else. But like you said, at that point, you're seeing red and it happens.
Yeah, it happens. We know it happens. All right. Did we get it all covered?
Yeah, I know those were all the ones I put up, and you threw up the one about the second race at Richmond, which, like I said, I hadn't even seen that one, so that was interesting to think about and talk about, and we'll see what happens down the road. So I think we're good for tonight, Sharon.
Okay, well then we'll get off a few minutes early here. Let's go ahead and do our sign-off, and we'll take it from there.
All right, you can follow me on Facebook, Michael Hoosman, MoparMJ8 on Twitter and Instagram. Again, I won't be available on Thursday. I know hopefully Brian will be back this week to cover the preview show. We'll see what kind of hot topics. Again, maybe a penalty or two. We'll see what comes out throughout the week. But if nothing else, I'll put it up on the message board and chime in there. If not, I will talk to you next Monday night. I got weekly racing coming up at Jackson Motor Speedway, your Capital City Raceway. We've had two great events so far to start the season. That darn pesky weather has been in the area, but we've been able to manage around it. So I understand Sal talking about that going into this weekend. We go through that a lot here in the South in the April into May time frame. It's kind of a hit or miss.
California. Southern California.
Yeah, I know. It's not normal for them. I got you.
I'm just blown away by that they've been so affected by the weather out there so in the early part of the season. I'm Fan for Racing site on Twitter, Fan for Racing blog and radio at Facebook, and our website is fanforracing.com. We have our player there for our Fan for Racing radio show. We will be back with the podcast on Thursday. We did play the interview with Chandler Smith earlier in the show. I thought he gave a really good interview. He was also entertained by the Dawson Cram Joey Gase incident, and he said he really feels as though he likes it when drivers are allowed to show their emotion, but that is a little bit of a dangerous way to do that. So it was interesting to hear his take on it. He had some other interesting things to say as well. So you want to go back and listen to that if you didn't hear that from earlier. And Sal was a little bit late coming on, but he was able to help me with the previews. So that was really good. And we'll see how things shake out for next week. We should be back on Monday night for the review of the weekend at Martinsville, and I'm really looking forward to those races. We'll be previewing those races on this Thursday's podcast. Well, again, we'll put it out early in the afternoon so everybody will have a chance to listen to it before the racing begins. And I am traveling back from Texas on that Sunday, so I anticipate getting in early in the morning on Monday. Then I'll have to kind of get the all the recaps and everything up on the website. So I'll be sleeping just before the radio show. So hopefully I'll be refreshed and ready to go by the time we get started. But just a heads up that I'll be maybe lacking a little bit of sleep when I come on next Monday night.
So you do that once in a while. That's a lifestyle to me. So I understand that.
I understand. But we'll make the best of it. I'm looking forward to it. I think the racing at Martinsville is going to be fun to watch, especially with this short track package that they have. We're going to see a lot of strategy. We're going to see a lot of tire wear. And hopefully we'll be able to see some passing as well. So we'll see how that plays out at Martinsville this weekend. And I can't wait to do the preview show on Thursday. So we'll look forward to seeing everybody, if not this Thursday, then again on Monday night afterwards. So take care, everybody. We'll see you again on Thursday.
All right. Have a good night.